2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock.
Around the world echo the news. Russia had blasted a man-made moon into outer space.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Well, I'm not a crook.
I learned it by watching you.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We are calling it iPhone.
Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center.
I am inevitable.
All right. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Carrie, a.k.a. Care Bear. And along with my friend Michael, we'd like to welcome you to Growing Up Atari.
It's Michael, a.k.a. Michael.
All right. So this is a podcast about stories. We hope that the listener, if there are listeners, enjoys the podcast, maybe comes up with some fond memories of their childhood.
I think there's one listener out there. I see him.
I hope so.
See him right there.
I hope so. You know, if we got one, we'd be happy. So this is not, or we're not really jumping for too much here. The idea behind this podcast is something that we've wanted to do for a long time and just never have. My friend Reed and I used to tell stories at work, or when we were hanging out, we'd tell a lot of stories when we were jogging, trying to keep in shape, which I have failed to do.
You're in shape, just a different shape.
It's right. it's a rounder shape.
Yeah.
Some of the stories we'd tell were true. Some of the stories we'd kind of make up. And a lot of them were just from our childhood. People seem to enjoy hearing them.
Prolonged childhoods that are still happening.
That's right. I'm 48 years old, and I believe I'm still a child. By the way, you can find my friend Reed on Twitch. He has a podcast called the Not So Important Gaming Podcast. I would check it out. He's a pretty great guy. The true stories were probably everybody's favorites. You know, everybody loves hearing stories about people's childhood. The not-so-true stories developed and became better stories. They were sort of like fish stories, you know. The fish got bigger.
There's a couple stories like that about me that my parents like to go on about that every time I hear it.
It sort of gets better.
Yeah.
That's right. Not exactly how it started, but we love telling the stories, and it seems like people love hearing it, so that's kind of what we wanted to do. A podcast about stories. Reed's moved up to the Northwest, but we hope that he joins us remotely on this podcast as much as possible, because he certainly was a large part of inspiring the podcast.
So why stories?
Why stories? That's a great question. You know, we make sense of a lot of things through stories. We tell stories for spontaneous communication. We tell stories for cultural information. We share memories through stories. Stories can bridge connections. Storytelling can be a powerful tool. We hope that storytelling on this podcast happens kind of organically, and that everybody can relate to a lot of the stories.
These are certified USDA organic stories.
These are. There's no preservatives
no
in
gluten,
these.
Gluten-free stories.
Gluten-free, no preservatives.
No GMOs.
No GMOs. 100%. All natural stories that we're going to tell for you. Hopefully we enjoy doing it. Hopefully you enjoy listening to it. So let's talk about why Growing Up Atari. Why the title of the story? Because it's not about Atari.
No, I think to me it's more about how pop culture kind of influences us growing up. And you grew up with a different pop culture than I did. You know, things changed. I'm 32, so we're from different generations.
Yeah, defining moments in our generations. And that's why in our intro we have things from the 50s, 60s, 70s on, you know, through the 2000.
Every decade we try to find as many decade, you know, defining moments as possible. You know, these are the moments that created, you know, the world we live in today.
Yeah, and there, you know, there a lot of these sound bites and moments that we think about are what kind of trigger a story. A lot of times you'll hear something or see something, and then all of a sudden you remember a story from your childhood or something that someone told you.
And also, I think it should be said that these aren't obviously all of the defining moments. You know, there's other things that happen. These are just kind of quick things that everyone kind of knows about. You know, the moon landing, that's a Everyone knows what the movie is. Right. I wasn't there for it. I wasn't alive for it. But we all still kind of know about it.
Right. It's
just...
The I'm Not a Crook by Nixon.
These are things that kind of live on through history. And even the things from today, we try and find things that, you know, are going to stand the test of time.
Generational titles that were given... The baby boomers, millennials, Gen Xers. I'm a Gen Xer.
Gen Z, I think, is the new one.
Gen Alphas are the new one.
Are we naming like the baby generation? I
believe Gen Alpha started in 2015. Maybe I'm not positive. We can do some fact checking on that for the next show, maybe. But I never cared for titles. I never cared for the title Gen Xer. And a lot of people in my generation think we got a good one. I never cared for it, and I always referred to myself as either the Hanna-Barbera era, if someone asked me, referring to my Saturday morning cartoons I watched, or Evil Age, referring to Evel Knievel, which I could do a whole podcast on because this guy was my hero, and it turns out he was nothing but a thug. And then growing up Atari. Turn out, I think. It seems to be that way.
Never meet or learn about your heroes.
Yeah,
find
no.
Out they're
no.
just flawed individuals like
don't,
all of us.
Don't research anybody that you've looked up to. That's the moral of that subject right yeah. there. And
I
then
I never had a name for my generation. I guess I'm towards the older side of the millennial generation, but I don't really identify as that or as Gen X or as, I don't know, I've never really been good at identifying with groups in that way.
I think out of all the titles I give myself, growing up Atari just seemed to fit for a podcast title. It seemed to work, maybe.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And even though I wasn't, you know, Atari was before my generation, technically speaking, I still, you know, as a kid I grew up, I had one. We got it at a garage sale for $10 from a next door neighbor.
Right.
You know, lawn mowing money, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I grew up playing different video games, different games from what you've played, I'm sure, when you were growing up.
Well, I was Atari all the way around. Although, you know, we're from different generations, we're close enough, you know, but we are from, you know, different generations, and hopefully a lot of our co-hosts that we have on here, I'd like to get some older people, I'd like to get some much younger kids, you know, and really kind of, really have the stories told from different generations. For me, though, and since the podcast is called Growing Up Atari, I have talked you into letting us start with the Atari, the VCS or the 2600, and you got yours in the 80s at a garage sale? 90s. They made, you know what the crazy thing about the Atari is the Atari ran from 1977 to 1992 in actual production, sales, and development of games. I think it had a 1.15 megahertz processor in it.
All until that E.T. came along.
You know, E.T. was one of the things that hurt. There was a perfect storm that really hurt Atari. But if you think about 1.15 megahertz, the thing ran from 77 to 92. It's a pretty impressive run. In the late 70s, my life changed when we got one. In fact, we're playing on the system that I got as a child. It's my original Atari. And I'll tell the story maybe in this podcast about rediscovering this Atari, because it was just rediscovered about 2 years ago. It was in my dad's garage. So, it was like having an arcade in your house. And the games didn't play exactly like, the gameplay wasn't exactly like the arcade. And the graphics were certainly not like the arcade at all. And many of the games are pretty horrible. But your imagination brought you back to an arcade. And it was like having an arcade in your home. So it was life-changing. It blew, you know, my mind.
And really, to a degree, that kind of marked a change that lasted for several decades of switching from the arcade, which is more of a social group activity where you want your
right.
friends, to doing something at home. Maybe you have your friends over, but still, it's much more of an isolated playing at home by yourself, maybe a two-player thing. And that kind of lasted for a while until the modern era, where we're finally getting back to, this time it's not arcade so much as an online, but it's much more of a group activity.
Yeah, my kids play the Xbox. They don't necessarily even purchase games. They purchase them through the Xbox online, and they play with other people. It's amazing to think about what I've seen, the development of the games from, you know, we had a Pong before the Atari, but from the early stages of video games to now, it's pretty amazing. You know, with the Atari came a game called Combat. Later on, I think you can get Pac-Man with it, or even a combination of the two, I'm not sure, but I know Pac-Man came with it later on, but when we got it in the late 70s, it was Combat. And they claim to have 27 different games in Combat, but it's essentially the same game. You're either a tank or a form of an airplane in which you battle the next person. The goal is to solely shoot that person more than they shoot you before the time runs out.
Pretty sure you cheated at that game.
I don't think I did, but we're going to play that here in a little bit.
You know the cheat codes.
I don't think cheat codes existed in 1977. I think that that's a little more modern than that. And then
that's more my era, I guess.
I think
Super Nintendo went up.
We'll talk a little bit about combat, and then we're also going to play Yar's Revenge, which was one of my favorite games, and Pole Position, which was one of my favorite games. Pole Position has, I think, the greatest video game commercial of my childhood. I just absolutely, it's in my head. It'll always be in my head. It's a beautiful commercial. Yar's Revenge, the cool thing about Yar's Revenge is it actually had a story behind it. And when you bought it, it came with a comic book that explained who the Yars were. I don't know if we'll read the comic book. I might just recap it.
Atari game with a backstory.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. A few of them did. In fact, they had a comic book series for a short time period, or maybe it was a limited run. I think it was called Atari Force. I don't own it, don't have it. If anybody knows more about it, email us at growingupatari@gmail.com. We'd love to have that input. But Yars Revenge did have a comic that came with it, explained who the Yars were, what the backstory to the actual game is. So our plan's not to be too ambitious, maybe one podcast a month. Try to keep this thing under an hour.
Unless the people demand more.
If the people demand more, let us know. You know, hopefully we get some feedback and people, you know, share your story with us. If you want to share your story with us, and you want us to read it, you know, we'd love to, whether it's a real life story or a made up story, just let us know. We'd like to read it on the show. You can, like I said earlier, email us at growingupatari@gmail.com, or you can visit us at, and this is kind of crazy long, but.
All right, let's get this whole URL out here.
You go for it.
www.growingupatari.wixsite.com/website.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Wix site, that's WIXSITE. So yeah, that's the entirety of the URL, so it's a little long.
It's kind of crazy long, but we also are trying to do this for $0.00.
That's pretty much my normal operating budget in life.
Fantastic. Hey, let's start off with combat. I think we've already explained the concept of it. So, you know, let's play a little bit of this game and see where...
Okay, no cheating this time.
Shall we play a game?
I do not like the way you steer in this game.
Oh, nice shot.
Nope. Oh, son of a gun. PG. That's difficult for me.
We're not gonna promise any non-cussing here.
Well, you said something about that. I almost made a comment about strippers when you said something about pole position. Like, I'm not talking about strippers. Like, maybe that's not the best thing to include. I don't know how family friendly you want this thing to be. Damn it!
You're getting there. You started off hot. What happened? What?
Oh, you don't go through the screen on this.
Only when you get shot.
That's messed up. Nobody puts baby in a corner. Except for you. That's every single corner now, I'm pretty sure. What?
Oh, you did? How'd you do that?
I found a secret portal.
I like the portal. I don't know. I think you're pretty good at this game.
No. Oh, says the guy with 11 against 2. 12-2, sorry. Here, you want to test it out and see where we're at?
Yeah, let's see. Okay, now we're recording.
Oh, how did you even do
that? It was luck, just pure luck.
Oh, come on. This is an interesting twist. Not for you, apparently. Hey, I got one.
27 different games, man. 27 different game ways to play this game.
Oh, I thought I was on the other side of the screen. This invisible mode is weird.
It's not easy, is it?
Like, where am I? Oh. How are you so fast?
When we play the Xbox, then you know.
Yeah, you just wait until we get Halo out here.
That's going to be revenge.
Why do I keep thinking I'm going a different direction than I'm moving? For those who can't see what's going on, we're playing combat, and we're two tanks and one empty screen, and tanks are only invisible when you shoot. So we're basically just running around blind, and somehow Carrie still wins. That's...
It's a pretty great game. You know, what's crazy is it's super simple graphics. It's based on a game called Tank, or Tanks, I don't remember exactly, but... It's super simple graphics. It's a super simple game. I mean, shoot somebody more than they shoot you. All, you got me. All the screens are pretty much... Ooh, you're on fire now. Oh, yeah,
3 to 14, huh?
Pretty much the same. And yet, it's still fun. It's got pretty good gameplay once you learn the weird controls, right?
Is that the end?
That's the end right
there. 3 to 16, final score.
All right, final score.
I'll be back.
We're doing the Jets now.
Where's Benny?
Benny and the Jets. Oh, nice one. Yeah. Taking the lead early on.
Yeah, I did that on the last one. It did not really work out for me.
It's weird because when you go in one screen and you enter another, you don't exactly come out where you think you're going to come out, right?
How'd you shoot me out of the cloud?
Well, I'm not really sure. Oh, your plane was flipped just right. We got a tie game here.
Oh, man.
How do we not crash?
You can shoot, you just cannot crash.
Apparently, yeah, that's the thing. These are new technology.
Wait, I forget which color I am. I'm red. Okay.
You're red, yeah. It's kind of a pink color.
All right, you're already back to your cheating ways, I see.
I don't know. Ooh, nice dog. It's a real dogfight.
He's on my ass, folks.
They look like paper airplanes, kind of, you know?
That is nonsense. If you hit me, I hit you. He obviously has a lot more practice on these games than I do.
Oh, yeah. You know, this was the only game we had for a long time. You know, because my parents were like, 27 different games. That'll keep you happy for a long time. You know, even though it's essentially the same game. But we played it. I mean, it was over and over again. And I think our second game was Space Invaders. I think we still played this probably more often than we did Space Invaders. Oh. Had to nail you one last time before game over here. Maybe two last times before game over.
Can't predict where I'm going to come out.
Oh, and that's it. I was trying to curl around one more time.
Got close.
All right.
I'll be back.
All right, and we're back. Just played combat.
Yeah, that's an interesting game. Even though you're using a joystick, it doesn't move like you would expect it to.
Well, once you get the movement down, though, I think it's good gameplay.
Yeah, if the problem is the steering, you have to turn your joystick, either push it left or push it right, and that twirls your tank, and then you push up to go forward in whatever direction that you're aimed in.
Right.
Which is not a fast way to move
a
tank in any bit.
Again, I'm going to recap. 1.15 megahertz of power in this machine, right?
Groundbreaking for its time.
It was. But, you know, like I think I was saying during the game, this was the game that came with Atari. And on the cartridge, it claims to have 27 different games, even though you're either tanks or tanks with barriers or tanks that bounce the balls around or tanks that are invisible or... Airplanes, double airplanes, triple airplanes, jets.
My favorite
double
is
jets.
The triple airplane against a single airplane.
The triple airplane against the bomber. We played that the other day.
Triple airplane, you get three shots with that. All airplanes fire at once. So it's three different shots that go out versus a single plane, which gets one shot. And if your one shot goes in between those three planes, it doesn't count.
Right, yeah, we played that one the other day. That one's a definite advantage towards the three airplane.
Yeah, see, in that scenario, you should be the one plane, I should be the three plane, because you always have a lot more experience than this.
So, like I said, and we got this game in 77, 78. It was pretty new.
I'm more accustomed to having joysticks on a controller that move in a much more natural way that you would expect it to move.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to play that, because that's what my brain
That was one of Atari's challenges, other than... the small amount of the processor in the machine, And later, there were games like Kung Fu Master that came out that Activision, I think Activision made that, I'm not for sure, but they actually put extra memory chips in the cartridges to do more. You know, that wasn't a technology in the beginning of Atari, but...
I'm kind of surprised that the joystick really just kind of left gaming until about the 90s when Nintendo 64 kind of brought it back on their controller, yeah. But I always thought it was brilliant to have a joystick as your controller.
Yeah, well, you know, it matched what really was in the arcades at the time.
Yeah.
You know, This particular Atari that we just played on, when we moved in 1985, we just moved, so I was an angry kid who didn't want to make any friends for a while or so. I made some great friends eventually, and that's great, but I didn't really want to be happy for I was angry that we moved. You know, when you're 13, you don't want to be uplodged, and so
well, this when game... you're 13, you don't really want to be happy about anything.
That's a good point, I have a 17-year-old and a 13-year-old, so I know this very well, right?
You just realize that you're supposed to be angry about everything.
That's right, and if you don't think you're supposed to be, your emotions just make it that way.
Yeah.
But we put this game in a box, and I don't remember what happened to it. And then my father passed away a couple years ago, and I was cleaning out the garage for my mother, and there was a box that was just falling apart, just, you know, disintegrated. And we pulled it down, and it was the Atari.
Yeah.
And this thing was, I mean, it was in a garage, so it wasn't getting water or anything, but it's not a temperature climate-controlled garage. And it sat out there for... how many years? And do the math.
So it's a testament to the longevity of the way they used to make those Ataris.
Right.
I bet you could put an Xbox out there and come back in 20, 30 years in the garage. That thing is not going to be working.
So that was, you know, that was kind of neat. And we brought in my kids and had a lot of fun with it. And obviously we're having fun with it now. So it's pretty amazing that it has stood the test of time and strength.
It's funny you mentioned the garage because... to me, my beginnings in video games also start in a garage, where when I was a kid, my brother and I were told that we had to clean out the garage, and that our reward for doing this, which it was no easy task. That was not a garage you could park a car in. That was just junk everywhere. And we had to clean that out, and as our reward for that, my dad went out after we were done and bought us a Super Nintendo, and I think one or two games... I forget the name of the game that came with it. It was very much like combat. It was some sort of spaceship flying around shooting things in a kind of almost 8-bit graphic. So it was a newer version of combat,
you know,
essentially.
So many of these things are just better, you know, not different but better. They improve them with technology and you know, also with some creativity, and but they're versions of the same games. I think my first experience with video games was Galaxia Arcades when we lived in... but this was pre-tokens. It was when they took an actual quarter.
Just a quarter, yeah.
And we'd go out there and we'd drill a hole through a quarter and tie a fishing line on it. And you could pop several credits.
I've heard of that.
Several credits before, you know, the string would break. Or sometimes you could actually pull it out successfully and move on.
I'm pretty sure it's a felony. It's a damage money.
I may have just committed myself to a crime, you know. But...
years ago, statute of limitations has got to be up on that.
I hope so. We would play games... all day long if we could, you know. I mean, we rode our bikes out there.
I spent many an afternoon inside. I mean, you hear everyone say, like, oh, go outside and get some sunlight and play. It's like, for me, growing up as a kid, I was kind of half and half. I ran around outside on my bike and play and pretend, but I also spent many an afternoon in front of Donkey Kong or Mario Kart or something like that.
I think there's a good mixture. Also, I think that, like, you know, I know a lot of people... or, you know, they think kids have their noses in computers too much, but I don't. It's amazing to see what my kids have, and I think I would be way more addicted to any of the things they're addicted to if I had it when I was
a
child.
Exactly. Yeah. My parents, if they were growing up and had a Super Nintendo, they would have been stuck
absolutely
in front of that thing just as
absolutely
much as I was.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's just like now kids have the phones. And their games on phones. Like,
it just so happened that our parents had Mr. Potato Head, and it sucked.
Exactly.
Because it wasn't even the Mr. Potato Head we have today. The original Mr. Potato Head were just parts. and you literally stuck them in a potato.
Oh, you didn't have the potato head. It was just parts.
No, I think the potato head came out. The actual potato head part came out. And, you know, we need some fact checkers here on this show. But
actually, seems easier.
I think in the 60s.
Except you can't store the parts in the potato when you're done.
Right. I think it was in the 60s or something because too many parents, it was a popular toy and too many parents. Maybe I'm wrong. I think it was the 60s. Too many parents were upset. They kept finding rotten fruit in the house. You know, because it wasn't just potatoes. It was like a potato head family, but the commercials would show, I think it came with cars and trailers and things, but they would show, like, you know, an orange and a potato. And
of course, this is also the same generation that bought a rock as a pet.
A pet rock, you know. I'll tell you, the funniest one of those things I ever saw was in a ghost town in South Dakota. And it was a little gift shop in the ghost town, and the lady there had a bag of styrofoam pellets, and it had really cute packaging. It was labeled Ghost Turds. And I thought, man, it's ridiculous. And she said, I order a case of those every month. So somebody's buying those things.
You can sell anything you want if your marketing's good enough.
Yeah, me and my mom one time got a gag gift. It was a box that had a piece of coal and a match. And it was a diamond-making kit. Yeah. So, I mean, if you come up with something, somebody's going to...
I'm pretty sure you cannot make a diamond that way.
No.
You can probably grill a hot dog.
But they sold them, though. And I bet it wasn't the only one sold. Somebody made some money, so it's kind of interesting. Let's get into Yar's Revenge, and I want to play the Yar's Revenge commercial, and it's basically all... It's, the audio is not great, because it's a... an old TV commercial, but it's basically a kid who's being babysit, and he tells the babysitter he wants to play Yar's Revenge, and she hears the word revenge. She's gossiping on the telephone. I don't know if people know the telephones back then were actually wired to the wall. And
they're very much like the icon on your iPhone now.
They are. That's what it looked like. That's the picture. And then she gets addicted to the game and sends the kid to bed. But let's hear that commercial real quick.
You have to buy separately to play on the Atari video computer system. Your parents hook it up to the TV.
Now you're supposed to be Yar, fighting the bad coach. You got him, Genie.
Can I still play?
Tonight, Steven.
This is the Atari video computer system. Yar's Revenge and other video game cartridges are each sold separately.
All right, so that's the commercial for Yar's Revenge. Now let's give it a play.
Shall we play a game?
Yar's Revenge.
Barely missed that.
So, Michael, you've only played this game once. You're a Yar. And
I'm exacting my revenge, I can only assume.
That is exactly what you're doing.
And
you've just been shot dead.
Yeah, well, they got their revenge on me. Or no, I'm getting my revenge, I guess. But
it's one of my favorite games, you know, of any system, I think, that I've ever played. Once you get the hang of it, you almost moved close. Into it. It's quite fun, but you have to basically shoot away the force field and then land yourself on the enemy's gunner and fire, and then your missile will come destroy it.
But it'll also destroy you.
It'll destroy you, and then it also has a I don't know if it's a heat-seeking missile that's just kind of following you.
It's a very slow missile.
It is very slow, so you got to kind of almost manipulate it.
I feel like I'm basically a butterfly.
Well, you're a fly. An actual common housefly. That's the definition of the Yar.
Well, for some reason, my missile wasn't hitting it very well.
Yeah, it's...
Ooh, that was close.
And when you're in the force field... Ooh, that was real close. When you're in the force field, the sort of heat-seeking missile can't hurt you. But you also can't fire. So it's
the
kind
force
of a,
field being the part that looks like it's messed up on the screen.
Exactly, yeah.
Those excellent graphics.
Yeah, I think Atari did a lot with what they had, you know. When they first released Atari, they thought it would you shot yourself with your own missile. Yeah, they thought that it'd have a couple year shelf life. Nolan Bushnell really thought it could go longer, but that different changes should happen that really never happened. They're making a movie about his life, so I'm pretty excited.
Can't get me. I'm in the force field. Sucka. See, this is the hardest part for me, is trying to get the missile over there before it moves out of the way again.
Yeah, it's easier if you shoot more of the force field one. It's almost like it aims for you sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't, so it's kind of random. And so sometimes you think, oh, I'm going to, you know... Sometimes you think, oh, I'm going to move out of its way, and it didn't aim for you, and you move right into it. Oh, you're so close. You're so close.
A little heat-seeking missile.
A little heat-seeker. Like, gotcha. I don't know if that...
It's kind of what it disappeared like. And reappeared over there. Lure him in. Got a false sense of security here. All right, come on, you slow little heat-seeking missile. Now get over here.
Oh, I almost thought you had it that time.
Got him!
Nice. And on to level two. Look at this.
This is the hard one here.
It's a much more solid force field.
Well, this one, they're rotating the frequency of the shield harmonics.
They got pretty high tech.
Oh. Whoa.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
We're in this force field down. It's almost gone.
You know, a lot of the Atari games were difficult because they were not meant to be to one. There wasn't an end game, you know.
They just get harder and harder.
They just got harder and harder, you know. So a lot of it was about imagination and gameplay. And I think this one has really good gameplay again, just like combat, really. And I think that's why it was a successful title, you know.
Oh, he hid in the force field. I didn't see him.
You can do it. This might be your last life, but I think you can do it. I believe in you on this one. Nice one. Oh, I thought you had it. Oh, careful, the missile's right there.
Yeah, they teleport sometimes. It's kind of weird. Gotta get out of this time. This is the one.
Don't let him shoot you. See what I mean? Like, that one he didn't aim towards you, so it's almost like he'd move towards it.
Fire again.
There it is. There's my dogs barking in the background. We're doing this in
teleported again. Dang it.
Oh, man. Well, that's Yar's revenge.
I did not exact very good revenge.
You did well. I thought you did well. Much better than last time. And it's only the second time you've played it. So, all right.
Revenge. And as a special little treat, we pulled up some of the actual original comic for Yar's Revenge, which I'll narrate for your pleasure.
The story of the Yars.
All right. Well, this doesn't give a lot of backstory, so we're just going to dive right in. I'll read it straight as it shows here. The new recruit is here, sir. Very well. Send him in. We'll dispense with the preliminaries and get right down to business. First, you will learn the secrets of our sacred past. We Yars are actually descended from the common housefly, still found on the planet Earth. Our early ancestors were brought into space quite accidentally on board the Earth's first interstellar excursion vehicle. Flashback here. Put them in Galley 5. Sure wish I could go imagine traveling into another solar system. The ship is launched with a burst of flame and hurtles through the Earth's atmosphere. It heads deep into the future. A strange formation just appeared in our path. No time now to... Arg!
Arg!
Thoom! Thoom, I guess that's a...
Like Thoom's a boom. A word. Thoom's a word.
Like
so,
a boom.
So this started out with two kind of fly-slash-humanish creatures telling the story, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it looks like, you know, we went back and we saw the early people, you know, more food supplies, Jake. Put them in Galley 5. Sure right. Wish I could go. Imagine traveling into another solar system. And then they launched this ship, and somehow it looks like a fly was sent in there somehow. Eventually, this noteworthy ship crashed right here in the Razak solar system. When the radioactive dust finally settled, the flies, miraculously the only survivors, had gained new powers and transformed into magnificent creatures forever after known as Yars.
The Yars.
We Yars populated the third, fourth, and fifth planets of the Rayzac solar system, where we established an orderly and productive community, much unlike here on Earth. We were able to live peacefully and enjoy our newfound powers. We should come back and take all their relatives here, back to that planet. And indeed, our powers are extraordinary. We can fly freely from the planet to planet. So flies that are capable of interplanetary flight without the use of any sort of suit, it looks like.
Yes.
That's handy. We can devour any substance. Wow. Talk about, they can eat anything. That's a superpower I wish I had. And convert it into energy missiles powerful enough to vaporize solid rock. Okay, so you can eat anything and then turn it into a missile? That is pretty extreme. To protect our peaceful community, this is said right over, you know, right on the picture of a giant gun, we designed the Invincible Zorlon Cannon. That's how peaceful we are.
That's right.
An attack came before we were able to complete the cannon. Our enemy, the Kotile, decimated Planet 4 without warning. You know, that's rude. If you're going to decimate a planet, at least give them a warning. Dissolving it into a radioactive field. Immediately, our top priority became driving the Kotile from our midst. We must avenge the destruction of Planet 4. We devised a secret plan, making use of our strengths, our unfinished cannon, and what little we know of the enemy. I will now disclose the details of this plan for your eyes only. Now, as far as I can tell, it does not say on here what the Kotile are, or what kind of being they are. I don't see pictures of them.
No, but they don't like the Yars.
No, well, their weapon of mass destruction against the Yars should just be a giant fly swatter. It just comes down and just smacks the planet,
right.
Flattens it.
Rather than a heat-seeking missile.
Or maybe, like, they hang a giant sticky strip throughout the solar system, and all the Yars flying from planet to planet are like, wait, what's this? And they get stuck.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah.
You know, the Yars, they're not the smartest beings in the world. But they can eat anything and turn into a missile. That's handy. But the enemy is based on a moon just across the neutral zone, which used to be Planet 4. Their base is protected by an energy shield composed of cosmic cells. The Kotiles hide behind the shield and fires destroyer missiles and worse, something called swirls. We are safe from destroyer missiles in the neutral zone, but while taking cover there, we lose our own ability to fire and communicate.
So that was that part of the screen.
Oh, that's... I see.
That's the neutral zone. I called it a force field.
But, okay, yeah. The neutral zone is basically where it looks like the screen is not showing properly. It looks like there's some sort of short in the AV cord on that one. But that's the neutral zone. Let's see. We are not safe from swirls in the zone. They're deadly anywhere. And the swirl would be what happens to that gun right before it attacks you.
Right.
Starts turning into like a little swirling swastika type.
That'll
business.
Be anywhere.
Yeah. Even in the neutral zone. So to prepare for battle, Yars pass through the armament center. Outfitted as warriors, they take off from the base and attempt to complete the following mission. First, a path must be broken through the Kotile shield, by firing energy missiles at it, or devouring the cells. Then the Zorlon cannon must be called in to do the rest. Because we never finished aiming the aiming system, the cannon is difficult, even dangerous to use, so listen carefully. To summon the cannon, you must devour a cell or touch the Kotile. This will signal our base to launch the cannon in a horizontal line with your flight course. So in other words, go over there and eat something and we'll shoot at you.
Yes.
That's a brilliant system. To aim the cannon, line it up with the Kotile, communicate back to the base when you're ready to fire, then fly out of the way fast if you don't want the cannon. If you don't, the cannon will invariably hit you first. And obviously that's not what we want.
And that happened.
Yeah, a couple times for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have heard our sacred history and learned the details of our battle mission. Now it is up to you to destroy the enemy and avenge our community. And so another brave Yar flies off to fight the Kotile. Will this one scout have the courage and skill needed to rid the Yars of a ruthless enemy? And most important, can you help him? Alright, well, here we have a picture. We've got Planet 3. We've got Planet Ep. I don't know what that's about.
It's like they've given you the diagram of the solar system, so you know what you're looking at.
The neutral zone. There's the Zorlon cannon. What happens if the Zorlon cannon, you know, I'm assuming Planet 3 rotates like the Earth, so eventually that Zorlon cannon is going to be facing away from this
planet. Time is of the essence.
Yeah, well.
You know, there's definitely no... You want to make sure.
Maybe when they took over Planet 4, they renamed it Planet Ep. and that's the code tile name for the Planet 4.
That could be, yeah. You know, it's not much of a story, but it gives you at least something, you know. And imagination was big with Atari because there's a game called Super Breakout.
I've heard of it.
Okay, and you're basically, it's like a version of Pong. So you're a paddle that sits on the bottom of the screen. And the top of the screen are colored blocks. Mm-hmm. A ball comes out, bounces off the paddle, hits the blocks. You break the blocks away.
I'm familiar with that game.
Right, so the thing about a game like Super Breakout is it's just colored blocks and a paddle. But the story behind it is, and again, I'm remembering these things from childhood, so I'm not going to be exact, but I believe you were some sort of an astronaut or a spaceman or something, and you were stuck behind a force field and you had to break through the force field. So it's just a simple paddle, simple blocks, colors, but your imagination brought you to the area where you were the astronaut breaking through the force field, you know, and that's so having those, you know, even those little bit of backstories, and there's a book called The Art of Atari that's really cool that a lot of that has to do with the cover art of the games and everything, how they sold them.
That's interesting because a lot of modern games, you start and they have little video playthroughs, usually at the beginning and then different points afterwards that that do the story for you. And it's less imaginative, it takes more time, but at the same time, like, well, I've played Super Breakout, I used to love that a lot, I didn't know any story behind it, like you're saying, the force field, to me it was just a simple game of paddle blocks and the ball.
I think Breakout was the story behind it was a guy breaking out of jail. And then Super Breakout, I think, was an astronaut. But yeah.
To me, I liked the games because they were simple. And in modern gaming, you've got a controller with all these different buttons that have different functions. I'm not saying it's the most complex stuff in the world. Some are more complex than others.
It feels complex to me, but I'm gonna try to embrace this when we get to
it. Yeah, it was nice to kind of go to a game where you just have a paddle. It's difficult. And all you do is just try and watch that ball, pretty sure it's going to bounce, and bounce it where you want it to go.
That's right.
And even that simple was still difficult.
I think that's why gameplay is so important with the Atari, why I liked Jar's Revenge so much, why I liked combat so much. You know, you briefly spoke about E.T., I think, at the beginning. And
I've heard that it was not the greatest game for the Atari.
You know, the thing about it was, it was a good concept. It was a good game. It was well done. It was just the gameplay was really difficult, and it was very, very hard game in general just to play. Not just the gameplay, but how they designed it. There's our dogs again. It was a big uphill battle, and I think it was so hard to play that it just ticked people off. I mean, people, they sold, I forgot how many copies at Christmas, but a large number of them came back right after Christmas.
Yeah, and you don't want it to be too easy of a game because it's boring. Right. It's too easy. So there's a fine line there where you've got to hit where it's hard enough to make it fun, but not so hard that you can't win.
Right, right. It's got to be enjoyable. If you're not having fun, you're not going to play.
Not all games, you know, hit that. You get a lot of them that are too easy, a lot of them that are too hard. So it's not easy to hit that mark where you have the perfect level of difficulty. And also, a lot of games anymore, you can change the difficulty settings. I know that's been around for a bit.
Well, the concept behind E.T. was good. The graphics for the Atari were good. You know, I think if it just would have been just a little bit easier, people would have actually liked it more. You know, and we could do a whole show on E.T. really, but so we won't get into it. But let's get into our final game for this show.
Pole dancing? Pole position?
Pole position. Pole position. It can be interpreted many ways.
Disclaimer, this game is not at all about pole dancing.
It is not. This game is about racing. It's a race game, and it was the first game that I remember as a kid in the arcade where they had a stand-up basic arcade cabinet, and then they had one of the enclosed sit-down, like you're in a car, cabinets, and that was super cool as a kid. But the commercial for this for the Atari, I love, and we're going to play that just like we did the Jar's Revenge commercial, but it's basically what would you call, like a yuppie from the 80s, driving a car with his family, and he gets stopped by this voice to, you know, basically tell him he needs to have fun, and this big hand reaches down and grabs him and shakes him out of the car into these race cars, and then the family goes zooming off in the race cars. It's pretty fun.
It made him any funner. I don't think that one.
It might not have, but it was one of the most memorable commercials of my time. It's right up there with Where's the Beef, you know. so let's have a listen to it.
Hey!
Yes?
You look like a real jerk.
Well, I am a corporate executive.
He stops exciting things from happening.
So what you doing?
Well, Muffy Buffy Biff Jr. and I are going on our Sunday drive.
Oh, no, you're not. You're going to play pole position!
So that was the pole position commercial.
Very,
right?
Very exciting. Yeah, let's
you ready to play? It. All right.
Shall we play a game?
It's like gaming's in your blood.
Well, I did play a lot of racing games growing up. To me, we had a game really similar to this called F-Zero. It was on Super Nintendo, and I played the hell out of that.
My first game, I think it was...
I've played a lot of racing.
Street Racers, I think. It wasn't nearly as good as this, and so this was pretty mind-blowing, and...
It's weird that you talk about the arcade, because the arcade racing game I'm most familiar with is Cruisin' USA.
Cruisin' USA, yeah, I'm absolutely familiar with it, because that came out when I was in high school.
What is going on?
And it's like you're stuck, yeah. The Cruisin' USA was the first game I remember where you sat in the cockpit type game, and you could choose between automatic or stick shift.
Yeah. Oh, I made it to the level 2. Looks
like. That was mind blowing to me that you could actually shift gears and
yeah, racing. Yeah. That was the fun thing about it. It kind of brought back the fun of shifting.
Yeah.
And so few people can drive a stick and know how fun that is. And I haven't even driven a good stick, but it was still really fun to drive.
Yeah. It kind of gave it more of a reality feel to it, I think, too. But
not great in stop and go traffic on a highway, but
It shifted on you.
Yeah,
so in the second level, they'll switch lanes. The first level, you just got to go around. In the second level, they'll switch lanes, and it just gets more and more difficult. But again, it's good gameplay, I think, in this one, and that's why I chose these three games. I really think that's the most important thing for me in a game is good gameplay. I didn't do so well, didn't make it to the first level, but I absolutely would want to go again, And that's what I love about it, but...
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's the end.
No, you didn't do it. But you did okay, though. All right, so let's...
No poles.
No poles. There's no poles. I think there was more signage and different things on the sides in the arcade game.
The name of this game makes zero sense to me, because, P-O-L-E, there's not... It's not like a pole, like a P-O-L-L.
Listen,
I'm not taking a pole. I know what the position is of the pole.
I'm not knowledgeable in racing.
Does this one have a comic, too, that we can read?
I don't believe it does. I'm not knowledgeable in racing.
This is a commercial.
But I do believe pole position is a term in racing. And
have to watch more NASCAR.
More Formula One.
Yeah, I started with F-Zero, which was more of a futuristic game, so you weren't dealing with race cars or like futuristic things that kind of hovered or something, and it was a strange game with a really cool soundtrack, but I played, that was the start of racing for me. Super Mario Kart, for me, that was the racing game, though I didn't ever play the racing as much as the battling. That really got me into steering.
I would think in modern day, Super Mario Kart's probably the greatest racing game they've done.
It's a fun video game, but as far as like a racing game, purely racing, I've played Need for Speed and Driver and Grand Theft Auto, and there's just any number of games. But my favorite's Gran Turismo 2 for, I think it was the original PlayStation, was one of my favorite games. That was a good controller, you know, and once you got the feel for the controller, like, it was so much easier than this. This is a really simple device to use, but it was, I don't know, there was something intuitive about the controller and having the double joystick.
It is a little tough to steer a car with a joystick.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because you've got up, when you press the joystick up, you're shifting into low gear, you press it down, you're shifting into high gear, and then left and right just moves your car back and forth. Right. That's basically your only controls.
I believe the button is a brake.
Oh yeah, well, who uses the brake very often?
You'll lose.
you use the brake in stuff like Gran Turismo and the more modern stuff because you can do things like drifting, you can hit your e-brake on corners and swing at different, you know. Right. There's a lot more, you know, they've just gotten more realistic.
I think the reason why I say Mario Kart is probably the biggest racing game in modern history is because you have Mario Kart can appeal to such a wide age group. I've played that with people from my age down to 9-year-olds, you know, all in the same game, same time.
It kind of transcends almost the generational gaps in gaming, and that everybody loves Mario Kart.
Almost just by, like, picking your character, you know?
Yeah, and I was known because my brother and I played a lot growing up. He's about 5 years older than I am. He was always, every single time, Toadstool. That was his character.
That's right. Why?
No, I'm sorry. I apologize.
I'm glad you're wrong on that one.
No, it wasn't Toadstool, because I was Toadstool a lot. It was the...
I need to know why you were Toadstool, first of all.
Well, I'll get to that in a second. Okay. I played two different characters. I played Toadstool and Princess Peach, and I'll get to that in a second. He always had... there was a turtle, because we played Super... For the Super Nintendo, the Super Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people swear by the N64 one, that's the one, but for me... Me and him played countless hours of Super Mario Kart on Super Nintendo, and were just to the point where we were so good that we would battle and race, and we couldn't beat each other because we just played so much. And so he was always the green turtle guy. There's a guy with a green turtle shell, one of those Koopa monsters.
Okay.
I was not allowed to be that character.
You couldn't be it.
If I got that character first, we weren't going to play. That was his character. He was the older brother. He got to do what he wanted. So, for me, I kind of bounced around a lot, but Toadstool and Peach are in the two lightest and fastest characters in that game. You can go up to the heavy ones like Donkey Kong and Bowser, and they are kind of fun. We would have kind of matches sometimes where we'd specifically choose those two.
Yeah.
Because they're a lot slower, they don't turn as fast, everything about the way they handle, and it's interesting that your different characters handle differently in the game. But for me, Toadstool and Peach were always the fastest, they turned the best, and so I got this nickname of Princess Hit and Run, because we would play the battle mode a lot. And so we would be running around.
I think that's
what
we'll call you for now on, Princess Hit and Run.
Michael, a.k.a. Princess Hit and Run. The name has followed me for a long time, and I'm okay with it. To me, it showed that I was better at the game than he was.
I
won a lot. He didn't have any nicknames.
If you don't have a nickname, you're not good. That's
exactly.
All. Yeah.
That just proved to me that I was obviously better than the two of us.
That's funny. My first experience with Mario Kart was when we got a Nintendo Wii for the boys. So that was my kind of first experience with it.
I don't know if I've played it on the Wii or not. I've played it on Super Nintendo, N64, possibly GameCube. I don't remember if they had that. I never owned a GameCube. But I know those two... N64's was good. It was the first time you had that kind of third dimension added.
Right.
And you know, that has to be... You know, recognized. But to me, the original, there was a level in the Super Mario Kart battle royale thing where it was all ice, and so you'd turn, but you're sliding around on ice, and you hit an ice cube and bounce off, but the ice cube would disappear once you hit it once, and so it was a lot of fun.
An ice version too,
and that was really fun, and we would just play countless hours sitting there battling each other.
Yeah, I was so bad at it, oftentimes I would pick Donkey Kong on his little motorcycle because it was the easiest to control.
He was slow.
Easiest to control.
Really easy to steer.
But so I would often pick that just because I would get frustrated with wrecking constantly.
You would not have wanted to play against Princess Hit and Run.
I would not have wanted to play against... We'll play a little Mario Kart maybe, and we'll see how... You can see how horrible I really am. So... Next month. What do you want to do? You know, we kind of really hit the Atari because that was one of the biggest influences in my childhood.
Well, it's also good, I think, to start at the beginning. You know, Atari was one of the first, if not the first, you know, major one that became, you know, a household name.
Yeah, I think it was the beginning of the video game.
It's like, where would the PlayStation 4 or Xbox One, or I don't even know whatever the latest ones are called anymore, I'm so out of touch, but yeah, where would they be without the Atari?
You know, it's a funny evolution because, I'm not an expert on this, so this is all just kind of basic summaring sort of the broad strokes of things. But the Atari, when the Atari came out, it really didn't have competition. You had the Odyssey, and you had the Intellivision, the Coleco. I'm a huge ColecoVision fan, and we can maybe get into some ColecoVision stuff. Mm-hmm. The Atari just had control. I don't know. They're the best marketing, you know. Maybe the best game designers. I'm not really sure. I mean, when you played Nintendo, the graphics were better. And in television, the graphics were better. But Atari still was winning that video game race. And
correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it had, for the time, the widest selection of games.
Oh, I think so. I mean, by far.
To me, is probably one of the biggest things about it, is that you weren't stuck with just that. That was the problem with arcades.
Yeah.
All you played on that game was that game.
Well, you know, I think ColecoVision, I don't know the exact story, but they got the rights to build Donkey Kong, and they built it for the ColecoVision, and it almost looks just like the arcade, and they built it for the Atari and the television and whatnot. But the Atari version looks horrible. I think that really angered Nintendo, and that was one of their factors to bring they were a toy making company. One of the factors to bring the Nintendo video game market to America. So in a way, you know, because they felt like it was their image being tattered, you know, in a way that sparked Intellivision. I'm sorry, Nintendo. Like I said, these are broad strokes, you know, and then Nintendo not wanting to really get into some of the markets that game builders wanted them to get into is kind of what sparked Sega. And Sega's really what brought gaming almost to where it is now, because they went after, you know, teenagers and college kids, you know, young adults. They went after, you know, those types of games. And they won the race for a while. They were beating Nintendo for a while. Nintendo had deeper pockets and held them out. And then you've got Nintendo had a contract with Sony to develop, you know, their disc game, the CD, and they sort of snuck out of that contract, which made Sony mad, which is why the PlayStation came out, you know, and I'm not sure what the evolution of the Xbox is, but
the Xbox, that was Microsoft, so that was, I think, Microsoft's...
Just said we're going
to
compete.
They wanted to get in the game, you know, that was their way of getting in. And that's kind of taken off to the point where they've got their own kind of AI named Cortana, which is from Halo, which is also, you know, it's Xbox's kind of flagship. It's weird with Nintendo, that kind of started the flagship games for systems.
Yeah.
Except I don't feel like PlayStation ever really had something like that. But Nintendo, you always have Mario. You know, Super
right,
Mario
right.
was
Sega had
always attached to
Sega,
that.
Sega had Sonic.
Yeah. And those two franchises, it doesn't matter what
incarnation. Did PlayStation have Crash Bandicoot or something like that? Bandicoot, Bandaflute, whatever.
Crash Bandicoot.
Bandicoot, thank you.
We're on PlayStation 4, I think, now. I don't even know if that's the latest one, but I haven't seen a Crash Bandicoot since the original.
Right.
Maybe PS2.
Weren't they trying to have... wasn't that where their goal was there? I think that was their goal there. So, yeah, you know, but it all came...
PlayStation kind of changed the game in that up until then, like, Nintendo, and even to this day, Nintendo remains very kind of gamey. Everything's very cartoony, and PlayStation was much more into being realistic.
Well, that's sort of where Sega beat, that's where the Sega Nintendo, and like I said, I'm brushing with broad strokes, I'm not an expert on this. my expertise stops after 1983 or 4. but I, you know, when Nintendo and Sega were battling it out, you know, that's when Sega went after they had the you know, sports and the fighting games and their commercials where the guys, like, you know, having crazy things happen to them. Their hair would blow up. They're like, Sega! You know, remember the yelling Sega commercial? Sega! You know? And there was the incident where, one of the fighting games, Mortal Kombat, or one of those games where Nintendo made the blood green because they didn't want the graphics to be...
That was probably Street Fighter. I think there was a couple of characters that had green blood, but there was also red blood in that game, I'm pretty sure.
But Nintendo wanted, and that really, people wanted to get Sega solely for that game because it wasn't, you know, censored or whatnot, what you'd call it. Not that green blood would be really make something censored, but, you know, it seemed like it did. So, it all really started, you know, with the Atari. Not that something else wouldn't have started it. Something always starts it, right?
Yeah.
But
if you want to get real, the arcade, you know, probably came before Atari, and that started it. But we could probably go back and find something before the arcade.
Then you go into the arcade, Pong, which was the first big arcade game. When they put that again, I don't know all the details, but I know when they put the Pong games into so many bars that they put them in, they got phone calls very shortly afterwards, and they thought, oh my gosh, we got trouble with these games. What are we going to do? And the trouble was the coin collectors were so full they wouldn't take another coin. You know? So
it's a simple classic game.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost the simplest you can get. Two people bouncing it back and forth, you know. It's soccer, it's football, it's basketball. How many games is it just a ball going back and forth
one thing
to try and get it?
Change
in
a couple things on the. You know? I was at a garage sale when I was in my mid-20s, and there was a sit-down video game of Pong. Like, I thought it was from an arcade, and I purchased it. I took it home, and I realized it was just the Pong game that you buy from Sears. And they'd mounted a television upside down. They'd made the cabinet, trimmed it out like a professional cabinet, put artwork on it, put a piece of glass on top, mounted the controllers up under it. And it was amazing because when you opened up the door, it had a lock on the door. I mean, it looked like a professional cabinet. When you had a lock on the door and you opened it up, it had all the wires run from the game up to the screen and everything, just almost just perfectly, just all parallel to each other, just perfect. And it had a hand-drawn wiring chart in case something went wrong. And the man who, I was at a garage sale, a widow, her husband had passed away, and her husband's the one who made it. He was an electrical engineer, and he just did it for his grandkids, you know. Anybody who saw it thought it was, you know, from an arcade, but it was just homemade at home. It was a beautiful thing. It's one of the things I kick myself for getting rid of, actually. It's one of the things I really wish I would have kept over the years, but, you know, hindsight. So, all right, well, let's talk about next week again. We sort of touched on that. What do we want to do next week? I know we should probably get into some things that influenced your childhood.
Well, for my childhood, we'd probably have to move up to the late 80s, early 90s. So probably a lot of early Nintendo, Super Nintendo, even a little bit of N64. For me, Super Nintendo was the big one. That was my favorite. That's what I played the most. We never had an N64. I had friends with them, so I just played it over there. But I always had a Super Nintendo. I think we had a regular Nintendo for a while. And eventually, I remember it was a big deal when we got the PlayStation.
Uh-huh.
PlayStation was the that was kind of like my teenage years, and that started a whole different side of gaming for me. A lot of, you know, I was hitting adolescence at that point, so a lot of the music I was listening to, I listened to while playing games, and to this day,
there
are still CDs I can listen to that remind me of the video game I was playing at the time.
Yeah, music's an incredible bridge to the memories of, I think, anybody's childhood. Let's touch on maybe some Nintendo, Super Nintendo 64 stuff.
Yeah, you've got a Super Nintendo.
We have those. Nintendo? We have a Nintendo, Super Nintendo, and Nintendo 64. We don't have a PlayStation. But I bet we could. I bet we could acquire one.
Yeah.
For the show. I think I can, you know, find somebody that has one.
It's been years since I've played the original. I know PS2, that one was for almost a decade, like the standard in video games around the early 2000s or so. That became kind of the one. And then it didn't really get dethroned until the Xbox 360, even, in my opinion, more than the Xbox original. That's when things kind of changed into the modern gaming era. But for a while, PS2 was kind of the standard. You know, even people that didn't play games had it as a DVD player.
Right, and see, the Nintendo 64 is modern gaming to me, so this will be fun.
Yeah.
You know? maybe we'll step away, we'll do some gaming, and maybe we'll step away and I'll surprise you with something from the 90s. Maybe. Maybe. We'll see what we can do. Crossfire!
Got that for Christmas. I'm so happy when I got that for Christmas.
All right. So, hey, if somebody's listening and they want to write in, they want to talk about anything that we talked about today, the Atari, their favorite memories of the Atari, or what we're going to do next week. We're going to do some Nintendo next week. Early Nintendo is what we're going to start with. And maybe if we have time, we'll hit PlayStation. That might be another show, but we'll see. If you've got any memories, any stories, or if you just want to write a fictional story and you want us to read it, send it to us, growingupatari@gmail.com.
I don't know where you have it in this
long
book here. All right, we've got www.growinguptari.wixsite.com/website.
All right.
I'm not going to say /or/ because I always forget which is which.
Yeah, so you can visit us there, or you can send us an email, tell us your story. We really would love to share some people's stories. We hope that you enjoyed the podcast.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about games, especially in this one. But again, this is not necessarily just about video games. You know, we're talking about board games. We're talking about the things that we did growing up and how they kind of shaped us into who we are now. So it's not just, you know, it doesn't have to be video game related necessarily, but, you know, tell us about growing up and, you know, things that you did as a kid.
It's all about stories. Let's say goodnight.
We'll see you next time. Thank you.